This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There was a time when the words Japanese imports summoned images of a Walkman, DVD player, or a car. Now, all those products are still available, but these days Japan makes more money exporting popular culture to the U.S. Hello Kitty, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh!, for example. Let's not forget all those Japanese video games which are played on Nintendos, Segas, and PlayStations. Many of the characters in those games star in increasingly popular Japanese animation movies called anime. The legendary animator Miyazaki won an Oscar for Spirited Away. And the latest Japanese pop culture craze to hit America can be found at your local bookstore, even your local public library. You can now find rows and rows of books with titles like Rurouni Kenshin, Volume 4, Dual Conclusions, or Fruits Basket and Chobits. Those of you in the know are probably saying, duh. But for those of us who may not be comic book geeks or have a 12-year-old around, these Japanese comic books are called manga, and in a publishing industry with few bright spots, manga is a star. Later in the program, the IRS questions the tax-exempt status of the NAACP, plus what may be the end of the line for Ma Bell. But first, manga and Japanese culture. If you're a fan, call and tell us how you discovered manga and what you like about them. If you're not, call with any questions you may have about the stuff your kids are reading. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. More often than not, knowledge of manga comes through the culture maven in the family. For novelist Peter Carey, that's his son, Charlie. Peter took his then 12-year-old son to visit Japan and wrote a book about it called Wrong About Japan. He joins us now from our bureau in New York. Peter Carey, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil.
What did you think when Charlie introduced you to manga?
Well, actually, he started off with Japan, in fact, watching Japanese movies, which I thought he, in a way that made me suspect, he felt culturally more at home with his idea of Japan than he did with his home in Manhattan. But that was another issue. We went from that into manga and anime, the animated films. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was just sort of sitting by him on the sofa, as you know, parents do, trying to somehow connect with something. And I started, and this was not the comic strip, but the images on the screen. And I thought, God, this looks really interesting. And I'd been to Japan a few times, and I started to think, I can see this little American boy's watching all this, and he's understanding it in his way. And I just started to think, God, if you were Japanese, what would it mean? Hmm. And so we started to have conversations about this sort of thing. Why would someone, for instance, in one of those Miyazaki films, have a clog with only one heel, if you can call it a heel, in the very center of the sole? What does that possibly mean? And so he was just enjoying it at one sort of level, but I just saw him becoming more deeply involved with the notion of Japan, and then he started to ask me, can he go there? And because I really did have such a good time in my previous visits to Japan, I started to think this might not be a bad idea. And being a writer, you know, particularly when we've finished novels, people ask us to do all sorts of strange things, like write movies and go mm-hmm. to Bulgaria and things like that. In this case, somebody said, would I like to write about something like this? And I suddenly thought, this is our meal ticket to Tokyo. So I'm the moron in the story completely. And anybody who knows about manga and asks me anything, you know, they're going to find it. They're talking to an idiot. But I'm the father. And we, Charlie and I, did set off on an adventure that we both wanted to be on. He, because he wanted to meet his comic book heroes, he wanted to meet Miyazaki, the great director, and he wanted to meet the director of the perhaps less great Gundam Wing and Mobile Suit Gundam, and the director of Blood the Last Vampire, and he wanted photographs of himself with them. And so that was sort of, you know, I was supplying all that, but we had this very interesting series of conversations connecting manga and anime to the place, to the earth that they'd grown out of. Because it seemed to me it was impossible to hide the past, and these came from somewhere, and it might be popular culture, but they're sitting on the top of a very ancient culture, so we pursued that sort of approach.
One of the subtexts of your trip was the conversations you and Charlie would have about the real Japan. Meant different things to each of you, as it turned out.
Well, I'd had a friend who I was in Tokyo with, who was incensed when he first saw Tokyo. And he said, it's so American. And he's looking around at these modern buildings. He said, I want to see the real Japan. And I said, well, what do you think the real Japan is? He said, well, you know, temples, you know, and tea ceremony. And so I gave him a horrible... I teased him for the next 2 weeks. Because, in fact, no matter what Tokyo might superficially look like, it's an intensely foreign place. It's inaccessible in so many ways. And you can go into Mr. Donut, which, after all, how American can you get, and find yourself in a weirdly Japanese environment where people are greeting you, bowing, and their little sing-song welcome and so on. So it's everything gets changed. Like, there's an area in Tokyo where called Harajuku, where you get kids hanging out, and they've dressed up as Michael Jackson, or say Sid Vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see the transformation, if you see Sid Vicious in Harajuku, this Sid Vicious is going to be meticulously observed, perfectly detailed and very clean. And what's been created then as whatever starts as, with the sex pistol ends up in Tokyo as some other whole very odd Japanese thing. And one of the great pleasures of going there is seeing these transformations from, you know, one thing, one culture to another. And they never end up Western, it seems to me. They end up... the real Japan was our mocking thing of sort of saying, the real Japan, Charlie's taking my friend's point of view and saying that's museums, it's temples, mm-hmm. it's the old Japan, it's Kabuki, which I made him go to. And we were going to do cool stuff, and we were going to, you know, we were going to hang out in Harajuku, and we were going to go looking at cool things in stores and play video games. And we were also, because he had a deal with me, because if he wanted this trip, there were things he had to do. I said, I'm not going to put up with you complaining about what you've got to eat, because we're going to be eating with people. So he then went into training with raw fish. he really wanted to go. He learned to eat all that weird squishy stuff.
I'd love that. I mean, you mentioned that he seemed to feel more comfortable with the idea of Japan. While you were there, he told you, oh, this is where I'm going to live after my band fails.
Yeah, well, Neil, I've got something to tell you. You know, as you know, at that time I said to him, but you don't have a band. And he said, I know, but it's a rite of passage, Dad. You know, so when my band fails, I'm coming to Japan. Now, that's sort of funny, and it was exactly what he said, and I was amused, and I'm still amused. But I have to tell you, his band has a gig at Red Hook, Brooklyn, in a couple of weeks' time. And better or worse, depending on your perspective in this, he couldn't study Japanese at school, but he's now done 2 years of Chinese, and he's doing Japanese next year. So one of the interesting things when I think about, and I only just thought about this today, in a way for him now at the age of 14, the passion for anime has fallen away a deal. And manga, he will read manga occasionally because he, like my oldest son, really seems to have no real interest in literature. So he'll do that. But something real's come out of this in the sense that I'm now sort of rather worried I'm going to lose him to Japan. He's going to go to Tokyo and marry some Japanese girl, and I'll never see him again.
It's a long commute, yeah.
It's a long commute.
Let me ask you, I mean, one of the things your book is called Wrong About Japan, one of them, keep finding, making mistakes, realizing that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing to have, as it's pointed out to you early in the book. But, for example, that one-toed sandal you mentioned earlier, one-toothed sandal, you'd invested it with great symbolism. It turned out you were completely wrong.
Well, I got everything. I think in the anime, or as I was beginning to understand it, somebody said monks with... I know in Basho there's a mention of a group of monks who do it tough, you know, and they're living in the mountains. And so I thought, oh, well, they've got the one heel, the one heel, because it's harder. But then finally I talked to a very old clog maker in Tokyo. He said, oh, you mean a one tooth. And a one tooth, in other words, a one heel, is easier to walk with in the mountains. Because you don't have the problem of two heels sort of twisting and the terrain not being flat and so on. But those, you know, I was, of course, continually bound to be wrong. I don't think I went in there so arrogantly, in fact. My ideas were sort of like questions. Is it possible that and such and such such and such? Although we would be wildly excited, Charlie and I, on the train out to Brooklyn when we thought of various things like this. But I think there's also another part of it, which is, from the Japanese perspective, a foreigner cannot possibly be right. A foreigner cannot possibly know. A foreigner may well speak perfect Japanese, but somehow no one might understand him simply because it's impossible that a foreigner speak Japanese. So there is, you know, there is in our narrative, you know, mostly, of course, we're people bumbling around, asking questions, not knowing where we are. We like people, like when we all travel, basically, you know, offending people, misunderstanding, seeing mystery where there is none, and so on. But there is also this other aspect of things where we are doomed to be wrong about Japan.
We're talking with novelist Peter Carey about his new book, Wrong About Japan, A Father's Journey with His Son. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with David, who's calling from Rochester, New York.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Long-time listener. Great program today. I go to Japan quite often since 1999, and I remember as a boy, I remember seeing Astro Boy a long time ago, maybe longer than I want to admit, that really influenced my thinking about robots and the future. Also, there was another cartoon called Speed Racer, that car that can jump, that was one of its qualities, that became the first object that I learned how to draw almost from any angle.
I have to admit, I watched that show as well, and I was being plagued by my sister at the time and intrigued by the fact that, at least in this cartoon, your sister was your spare engine.
Right, that's true. But Astro Boy, the creator of Astro Boy, Osamu Tezuka, he is considered the god of anime. Mm-hmm. And
David, can I interrupt you? Can I put you on hold for a second? Because we've got to go to a break. I'd like to pick
sure.
This point on robots is very central point of Peter Carey's book, and I'd like to raise it with him and with you when we get back from a break. So I'm putting you on hold. Hit the right button for once. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the explosion of Japanese popular culture in this country. Video games, of course, anime, and now manga, Japanese comic books. Many kids learn about manga through television, through anime. Here's a clip from the hit afternoon anime series, Yu-Gi-Oh!
Don't you realize you're going to lose whether you attack me or not, Yugi?
If I don't attack Kaiba right now, he'll sacrifice his monster and summon Obelisk. And if I do, he could destroy my Slifer. And without it, I'll never win this duel. What should I do?
Who knows? Well, we're talking with novelist Peter Carey, who discovered a manga through his 12-year-old son and wrote a book about it called Wrong About Japan, A Father's Journey with His Son. And with us on the phone is David in Rochester. You were talking about robots before the break.
Right, right. This led to an interest in becoming an electrical engineer, and I finished my degree at Rochester Institute of Technology. In my hobbyist way, I guess I built a couple of robots, and I'm still glad to say that a lot of people are into that. Matter of fact, that campus is going to sponsor a robot competition this spring.
Hmm.
So, that Astro Boy and the Japanese manga, they also have another manga called Hikaru no Go, where you not only are entertained by the anime and the manga, but you also learn this fascinating old game called Go, or Ego, as they say in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's a great game and better than chess. I'm willing to give you that. But I wanted to stick to manga for just a minute.
Sure.
I wanted to bring you back in, Peter Carey, because this is, again, talking about anime, one of the most popular. And I think they switch from manga to anime and video games, for that matter. Mobile Suit Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
And Mobile Suit is the Japanese word for robots?
Well, they're a very particular sort of robot, and they're giant war machines which look like robots, but in fact are piloted by these very, you know, young boys and young women, some of them teenagers and younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, hugely successful show, and my son certainly liked it, and we certainly went off to discuss this series with Mr. Tomino, the director, and his 65 assistants with their tape recorders. and in the end, like all of these things for us, we're always a little bit wrong-footed about the about what we think's happening and what they think's happening. I could never really get to the heart of the Japanese interest in robots, or why the Japanese would frankly say, we love robots. The Japanese people love robots. And the only thing that sort of came to my attention very recently was someone talking with a Japanese person about having guest workers to come into the country. And mm-hmm. The Japanese have tended to keep themselves in a relatively homogenized nation. And this Japanese person said, well, we won't need guest workers because we're having robots instead. I don't know what sort of light that shines on robots, but I thought it was worth mentioning.
And by the way, David, thank you very much for the call. But I was fascinated by your segment of your interview with Mr. Tomino, the director. Mm. Gundam, he said, was launched just to sell toy robots, to create a product that people would buy. There's no real inspiration behind it. He made Gundam because it was his job to make Gundam, and before Gundam, he made lots of animations, which were also used to advertise robot toys. And
Mr. Tomino is dissembling a little bit, because if you'd sat in Mr. Tomino's presence, you'd know he saw himself as an artist. And you know that if you watch Mr. and although this is true, that these were conceived to sell products, and that's what he's doing, if you listen to his conversation, he was so passionate about what he wanted to create and how the robot manufacturers insisted that he set this thing on Earth to show how big they were, and he wanted to send it in outer space and so on. So Mr. Tomino, while telling me, that these were just to sell robots, presents as an artist, feels himself to be an artist, and so he was being perhaps a little humble about himself and a little bit difficult, too, at the same time.
Well, let's talk now with Calvin Reed, who joins us from our bureau in New York. He's the comics editor for Publishers Weekly, and he's been watching the growing influence of manga in the publishing industry. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Neil.
One of the things that I think is key to this is the way these characters duplicate, not just in manga, not just in anime, but on the video games as well.
Well, yes. In the book market, one of the things that I've been learning, as I've tried, and I think as most book publishing professionals have had to do it, to try to learn about this new category, I've learned just how other formats drive book sales. Anime in particular, but certainly in the games. And what you find is that as anime proliferates on cable TV and on broadcast TV, on the Cartoon Network, some of the most popular book properties tend to be the same ones.
Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, manga are beginning to invade, beginning to become some of the most popular books in America.
There's certainly probably the fastest growing category in the bookstore market right now. It's certainly one of the most fastest growing, and really Japanese comics in English translation, manga, they're really transforming not only the comics industry, but they literally have forced comics into the book trade, because comics traditionally in this country were kind of not really a part of the book publishing industry. Manga has really changed all that and really made them a really powerful part of the book retail chain.
Mm-hmm. They also appeal, the traditional traditional market for American comic books is boys of whatever age. The Japanese appeal to a wide range.
Well, that's what really is so revolutionary and so exciting about this. That Japanese comics are bringing young girls and young women to comics. I mean, it's a demographic that, in many ways, the American comics industry essentially gave up on. I think the last of the American sort of romance comics aimed at girls sort of died out in the early 70s. And yes, the American comic book industry has been essentially focused on boys and older boys for most of its sales. Manga has transformed that. And really, I mean, the sales of manga, and we're talking, I think in 2004, it was somewhere around $150 million, a big rise over the previous year. Teenage girls, young women are really driving this. This isn't to say that boys obviously aren't reading manga too, because there are action manga as well. But young girls really have transformed it. They've established this as a real category in the bookstore market, and there's a whole story about why girls are happy to be going to bookstores rather than comic shops to buy comics. Comic shops can be kind of off-putting to girls because they're really, you know, caves for boys. But this is exciting. I've been writing about comics at Publishers Weekly since the late 1980s. And this is tremendously exciting because really manga is really putting, not only is manga bringing women to comics, but it's actually bringing all kinds of comics into the book trade.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Emily, who's calling from Denver, Colorado.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to talk about, you mentioned demographics. My husband and I own an anime store in Denver called Gimme Anime. And what I wanted to mention was that you've said a lot of things about children, but in our experience, my husband was the president of one of the longest-running fan clubs in the U.S., which it's been just celebrated its 21st anniversary. We find that the majority of people actually buying these are in their mid to late 20s, if not older, and that the women make up about 50% of the market. So the preconceived notion that it's young children or that it's for boys is really going out the door. Also, I wanted to mention the reason why the women are coming into anime and manga so heavily is because of manga. I haven't read Peter's book, but the thing is, in Japan is, if I recall my sales figures correctly, it's like 100 million yen of manga is sold every day. And it ranges from children's stories like Pokemon to adult stories of political intrigue to really adult stories or romance novels and things like that. And that's what's getting the girls in the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the romance. You mentioned Fruits Basket, and on one hand it is a standard romance story, but on the other hand it's about a 14-year-old girl who's been orphaned and is trying to make it on her own. And it's literature that can be comparative to, you know, stuff my generation read as children, like The Bridge Over Terabithia and stuff like that. And that's what's getting the kids in the door and the adults, too. So what's going on is the kids tell the adults or the adults tell the kids. It's a huge, wide-ranging demographic we're seeing now. Nothing even comparable to comic books anymore. And I came from comic books, being a comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all over the place.
Okay, Emily. Thanks very much for the call, and good luck with the store.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yep, bye-bye.
Calvin Reed, a question. How come American English translation manga read right to left?
Well, actually, that's a very good point. Manga, well, obviously, the Japanese language reads right to left. But how the one of the reasons I think that, besides the fact that manga really appeals to a much broader audience, is that in the late 90s, really in the early part of 2000, 2001, one company in particular, Tokopak, hit upon the idea to simply stop reversing the film. It was the conventional wisdom in American publishing, you know, for manga's early publishing days, was that it had to be reversed, that Americans would never buy the material that read right to left. But manga's boom really has coincided with Tokyopop's interest in stopping the reversing of the books, and actually stop the Americanizing of manga, and that's what coincided with the boom. And then that was followed by other friends like Viz and other manga publishers.
Just to ask Peter Carey, would Charlie be caught dead reading a manga left to right?
Yeah, he probably would, but I do remember him on this very issue, sitting at Kodansha in Tokyo, talking to, you know, I think the biggest comic manga publishers in the world, probably, and sitting with one of the senior executives there, and we were discussing what happens in translation when you start to turn it the other way around. Anyway, in the middle, he just gave Charlie a pen, and he just said, draw a face in profile, and Charlie did it, and it was turned a certain way. And, you know, and his point was that, you know, that once you start to reverse everything, things have been drawn a certain way. You know, that the face has to face a certain way, and once you mess that up, you're messing up the art of it. And also, the other thing, of course, that happens in translation is that everyone's these things which are you can read as quickly as a traffic light in Japanese slow down.
Yeah.
And the Germans make them real slow, and the Americans make them slightly slower.
Let's get another.
You know, actually, one of the other things that have happened is that there are some of the newer manga companies are actually published, even though they're American originals or English originals, they're publishing them from right to left because the market now is such that it demands it. You're seen as all somehow not authentic if you aren't reading from right to left.
Miles joins us now on the line from Okemos, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to say that I like to read manga and Japanese anime, mainly because I'm a 13-year-old, and I like the young people to see, like, their blue and purple hair and all that all spiked everywhere and all that, and to see these gigantic swords that they wave around and the awesome fight scenes they have.
So it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
Do you like it better than American comics?
I like them both the same, basically. I'm kind of a comic geek right now, so...
Okay. Thanks very much, Miles.
Yep, thank you.
And good luck to you.
Yep, bye.
We're talking about Japanese culture in America, anime, manga. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is one of the leading publishers of manga in the U.S. is a company called Viz. Two of their titles, Naruto and Rurouni Kenshin, became the first graphic novels to appear on USA Today's top 150 list of best-selling books. That was last year. Elizabeth Kawasaki is managing editor at Viz and joins us from her office in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Manga's been around for a long time in Japan. Why did it take so long to get it here in the U.S.?
That's a very good question. There really weren't a lot of attempts made until about the 80s, and I think Viz was one of the initial companies that brought that over. They approached a company called Shogakukan, which co-owns us along with Shueisha, about bringing over comics. And at that time, you had Robotech, Akira was out in theaters. Others started to bring over things like Lone Wolf and Cub, and it seems like that generation was just ready for it. Before, there had been some exposure, Astro Boy and Speed Racer, as one of your callers mentioned earlier, but there was no comics to go along with it.
And
this generation, in the last 10 years, 15 years, they've grown up with Pokemon and Sailor Moon and Hello Kitty and Yu-Gi-Oh!, and they're used to visual stories. And I think that explosion, especially with Pokemon and Sailor Moon, these kids want this stuff. And it was like, hey, you know, and so there was a much larger push at that time. So I'd say in the last 8 years or so, it's really grown, especially in the last 3 or 4 years.
Let's get another caller in on this conversation. Kathleen is with us from Minnetonka, Minnesota.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, I lived in Harajuku for 5 years in the 90s, and every time I'd go on a train, there'd be somebody reading manga either in front of me or to the side, and, you know, I'd always take a peek and so forth, but I usually was very sorry that I took a peek, that often there'd be just awful, you know, scenes of violence or sexual content that I was just really sorry, so I just kind of made a policy of not looking, just in case.
Well, I think we lost Kathleen's phone there, but I think we got the gist of her call. Calvin Reed, is that a problem?
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate that sometimes manga seems to be saddled with the images of being perverted. I guess there's a name for it in the manga, hentai, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, manga is about all kinds of things. And all due respect to the caller, I mean, if you could peek over someone's shoulder reading any book you see someone reading on the subway, you might encounter sexual imagery. But the fact is, more often you're going to find something exciting or something silly or something funny or something tender if you look at the over the shoulder of people reading manga, which I think you're seeing more and more in the New York subways these days. So it's unfortunate that she was maybe saw something that offended her. But manga, one of the reasons why manga is so tremendously popular is that it's about so many different things.
It is, Elizabeth, it is not just for kids.
Oh, definitely not. There's every genre you can possibly imagine, every subgenre. There's stuff for kids, for teens, for adults, for what they call salarymen, you know, the guys who go to work in business suits, for housewives, stuff for males, stuff for females. There's sci-fi, there's horror, there's romance, there's comedy, there's robots and mecha. I mean, if you want it, they have it, any kind of genre you can possibly imagine. That's what's really different in Japan. In the U.S., it's been so superhero-driven for so long, whereas in Japan, there's a lot of relationship-driven and character-driven stories, but they do also throw in some action and some humor, and it's that good storytelling along with this imagery, soap operas almost, that draw in the kids, and that's what they really love from when they're very young.
Let me just end with this email we got from Jennifer Velasquez at the San Antonio Public Library. I'm the coordinator of teen services for San Antonio Public Library. Our teen department has a collection of manga and a small collection of anime. We cannot keep them on the shelves. They've spawned teen reading groups, card clubs, and art clubs. Manga is a librarian's dream. It seems to be a great way to get teenage boys to read, and I've seen them act as a gateway to regular fiction. Every public library should have a collection of manga, she concludes. Thank you for that email. And thanks to our guest, that most recently you heard from Elizabeth Kawasaki, the managing editor at Viz. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Also, our thanks to Calvin Reed, comics editor for Publishers Weekly.
Thank you.
And Peter Carey, whose new book is Wrong About Japan, A Father's Journey with His Son. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, is it the end of the line for Ma Bell? It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.